Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few, but if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
This time on Vet Story.
Depending on your view of the military and how it operates in war will certainly guide you as far as how you see this case. He's alleged to have stabbed an ISIS fighter while other SEALs were giving this fighter a medical treatment.
I don't know of a single combat veteran that wouldn't eliminate that threat from the battlefield.
It shows holding the head up and, in the other hand, holding his knife, almost like a deer hunter would hold up a deer by its antlers. The SEALs that are speaking out against him had conspired to come up with this story because they didn't like his leadership.
You know, if you have one piece of paper, you're a hero. If you don't have that piece of paper, you're a murderer.
It's clear that it's not really a clear-cut case.
Welcome to another episode of Vet Story. I'm your host, Phil Briggs. I'm a Navy veteran, interested in good beers and great stories. Today, we'll hear one of the most dramatic stories I heard all year long. The story of a Navy SEAL who's currently incarcerated and being charged with murder. And the victim? A wounded ISIS fighter. Yeah, a wounded ISIS fighter. We'll talk with one of the journalists that's been covering this case from the beginning. And we'll hear a glimpse of what really goes on the battlefield from a Special Forces veteran. Before we unpack this whole story, I want to invite you to listen to Vet Story on the Radio.com app. It's free to download from your app store, and it will introduce you to tons of podcasts, radio shows, radio stations, and other content you won't find anywhere else. And as we get ready to experience another episode of Vet Story, I'd love you to subscribe to it. rate it with some stars, preferably five. And if you'd like to share your thoughts, give it a review. Whether you're listening via Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher, or any of the other podcast players, we would be honored if every new episode we produce could show up on your phone. Now, if you want more great military veteran-themed content, check out our website, connectingvets.com. Now, back to the podcast. Late in the fall of 2018, I came across a story that I couldn't quite believe. The article described how a Navy SEAL, a decorated Navy SEAL with a 20-year career, was being charged with multiple war crimes in connection with the 2017 stabbing death of a detainee in Iraq. A Navy SEAL Chief Eddie Gallagher is now fighting from a brig in San Diego for his freedom. The 20-year Navy veteran has hired two high-powered criminal defense attorneys who specialize in military law. First, from Dallas, there's Colby Vokey, and then there's Philip Stackhouse from San Diego. Together, they're exploring a civil rights lawsuit against NCIS agents for alleged misconduct linked to his September 11th arrest and detention where he currently resides in San Diego's Naval Consolidated Brig Miramar. Back in November of 2018, an Article 32 hearing commenced with a special military judge sent from Florida to sift through the evidence. The judge will then recommend which charges should be forwarded or withdrawn by an admiral who could convene a general court-martial. Right now on the table, Gallagher has been accused of murder, aggravated assault, obstruction of justice, and professional misconduct. For more on this, I spoke with Marine Corps veteran, editor-in-chief of Task and Purpose, and founder of Duffelblog, Paul Zoldra.
The story here is it's sort of a Rorschach test of as far as if you see the particulars of it, you know, depending on your view of the military and how it operates in war will certainly guide you as far as how you see this case. The chief Eddie Gallagher, he's accused of a number of war crimes during the Battle of Mosul, stemming from a deployment of his SEAL platoon in 2017. And they basically boil down to the main charge is a murder charge. He's alleged to have stabbed an ISIS fighter while other SEALs were giving this fighter a medical treatment. The fighter was wounded in a battle with Iraqi troops, handed over to the SEALs, and then prosecutors say that Gallagher later killed the ISIS fighter. Now, this is going back to how you view this. There are many on one side of the one side who say, "Well, he's an ISIS fighter. Screw that guy, and you know who cares if he got killed." And that's an argument being made by plenty of people. And then on the other side is, you know, we are, you know, U.S. forces are under the Geneva Convention, and we do not just willy-nilly kill prisoners. And there's plenty of that. So the interesting facet of this case is it's just super political, and it's very much a new sort of case that I'm watching that I feel like will become a bigger deal as it moves forward.
Now, as of recently, they were going to a hearing to determine if this should go to trial, and those hearings are known as an Article 32, and I believe that's where I began watching your coverage of this story. It was in the preliminary stages in San Diego, correct?
Correct, yeah. So the case was basically, it was investigated by the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, and then they bring that to the Navy. In this case, it's the Naval Special Warfare Group 1 in Coronado, California, and they decide to bring it to an Article 32. And an Article 32 investigation and hearing is basically, it's a preliminary hearing where prosecutors just have to establish probable cause. You know, was there a crime or was there probable cause of a crime happening? And if so, if there is cause for a crime, then it would be moved to a court-martial or referred to something else. So I went down to Naval Base San Diego for the Article 32 hearing for Chief Gallagher and also his platoon leader. His name is Lieutenant Portier, and basically watch that unfold. The Gallagher hearing was by design. Article 32s are one-sided, so you have the prosecution just kind of introducing evidence, giving that to the hearing officer who is supposed to write up a report. In Gallagher's case, the evidence was a very big binder. We're talking like 500 some odd pages with eyewitness statements, video interviews, photos, text messages, all kinds of things. And then they also called one witness, which was the NCIS agent. His name was Joe Orpinski. And
he, as a witness, was the agent in charge with investigating this entire situation. Not that he was actually there on site at the time of the alleged murder, but he was the officer in charge of doing the research.
Correct, yeah. So basically the gist of this case is that at least during or sometime after the deployment of these SEALs from SEAL Team 7, a number of SEALs inside Gallagher's platoon brought up allegations of war crimes to their chain of command, and that finally kind of bubbled up to NCIS. And so an NCIS agent was assigned to the case, went and investigated it, interviewed a number of the SEALs in the platoon, and then some of them just decided we're not talking to the NCIS and lawyered up, and then also traveled to Iraq to interview members of the Iraqi unit that the SEALs were attached to. And so from that, you know, that investigation and that report, you know, then goes to the prosecutors who decided to refer charges against Gallagher. So Gallagher is charged with things like premeditated murder for the alleged murder of this wounded ISIS fighter. He's said to the prosecution says that he stabbed the fighter in the neck and the body with a knife. He's also charged with other separate incidents of war crimes, as far as two cases of using his sniper rifle to allegedly shoot and wound an elderly Iraqi man and a young Iraqi girl. These are two separate incidents that the prosecution has brought up, and those are based on witness statements from other SEALs in the platoon.
Mm. Now, as you've covered it, military officials have obtained cell phone text conversations from Gallagher, allegedly showing he sought to cover up the fatal stabbing. But within that binder, there was also just some pretty graphic images. Talk to me a little bit about what they presented.
Sure. So the most compelling, or at least the most interesting, as far as to me, is text messages and photos. And they introduce photos from Mosul into evidence, but under seal. So they weren't shown in the courtroom. However, Orpinski described the photos, or at least a few of them in question. One of the photos that he described was, it shows Gallagher basically holding up the fighter's head, not severed. So he's just kind of holding him up at his body, holding the head up, and in the other hand holding his knife and just sort of posing with this body, almost like a deer hunter would hold up a deer by its antlers, sort of that same pose. And they basically said that soon after the alleged killing took place, Gallagher texted a friend of his this photo and said, quote, "I got him with my hunting knife." Mm-hmm. There's other photos that, again, I have not seen, but were described of the platoon being in or around the ISIS fighter's body. There's also an incident that prosecutors have been talking about where Gallagher reenlisted almost immediately after this took place. And there's some photos, I guess, after the reenlistment. There's plenty of photos and text message evidence and all that kind of stuff. But I do want to make clear that these hearings are very one-sided, and so the prosecution is going to show all the worst of the worst. But when you sort of dig into the evidence and you question it a little bit, it's not a clear-cut case. I left this hearing after 2 days, basically, and I am not sure whether he's innocent or guilty. There are alternative theories that could be offered and certainly will be when this inevitably goes to court martial. You know, the taking a photo with a dead ISIS fighter is probably not going to help Gallagher's case. Taking a photo of something like that is just you're giving prosecution and evidence right there. But you're just taking a photo after and holding up this knife and texting somebody can be explained away, or it can be explained. And I've heard this from a source is basically saying that it's not necessarily him admitting to, you know, texting a friend and saying, "Hey, I killed this guy. You know, I got him with my hunting knife." It's more of I'm a SEAL, and I'm sort of exaggerating my war exploits right now to my buddy, and sort of, you know, BSing, like, "Ha ha, I got him." And right. That's kind of how the defense will likely cast it.
Speaking of how it's being cast, if I could, I saw a video that was released by Task and Purpose, and it was a link to a YouTube video. And in it, there's an Iraqi journalist apparently interviewing a teenager who is lying on the ground, severely wounded. And in the video, of course, the journalist is standing over him, asking him a few questions. You know, why did you join ISIS and how did you, you know, come to be here?
ليش اشتغلت وياهم جبروك لو انت باختيارك
ابويا
ها
ابويا كان يقتلني
ابوك يقتلك
يقول لا تروح عليهم
ابوك ما يقبل غير
ايه
لعد ليش رحت انت
انا قاعد يقولون طيبه يقولوا لك عافيه.
Is he the individual in question in this case that the SEAL allegedly murdered?
Yes, it is. So there's a video on YouTube. This was the link to this video, this was introduced into evidence. This is part of the NCIS investigation. And like you said, it shows this wounded ISIS fighter. He's basically surrounded by a bunch of Iraqi army soldiers, and he's interviewed with this embedded journalist in Arabic. And he's estimated to be between 15 and 17. The NCIS agent pegged it closer to 15, but his age is not, you know, exactly clear.
He's not a grizzled old man. Yeah, yeah.
You can see that he has been really he's definitely not doing too well. Apparently, he was hit in a coalition airstrike right before this. The Iraqis say that they shot him. That's another part that's kind of unclear as far as how he was wounded. But they captured this fighter with a PKC-47 machine gun. Like, there's no doubt that he was an ISIS fighter and he was shooting at the Iraqis. So not to minimize that. But he's interviewed, and basically the journalist basically kind of establishes that he's just like sort of young, confused kid that joined ISIS or was kind of fooled into joining ISIS. At least that's how the reporter sees it.
يلا يلا مشاهدين هذا عمره 17 سنه ويا عناصر داعش نلاحظ يعني ولد شاب يعني قشمره بهاي
And this video happens sometime prior to his turnover to the SEALs, and you can see some of the wounds he has. He has a leg wound on his left leg, right by his knee. Looks like he's bleeding from that. He's also got some kind of wounds down in his groin area, which you can't really tell, and he looks like he can't really breathe all that well. From here, there's sort of a gap in my understanding of what happens next, and this is kind of the crux of the case going forward. He is, you know, alive, and he's, you know, screwed up, but he definitely doesn't look like he's going to die. in this video. I asked a former Army medic to look at this video, and you know, he basically was saying, you know, he's messed up, but he's definitely savable in this video. But there's a gap because the fighter was then taken by the Iraqis over to the SEALs compound a short distance away. By their own admission in the NCIS documents, the Iraqis basically strapped him to the hood of their vehicle for the drive and then brought him to the compound, turned him over, turned this fighter over to Chief Gallagher, apparently. And then the SEAL medics, including Gallagher, started going to work on him and giving him medical treatment. They cut off his pants to get more look at what his wounds were. And there's no video of this yet. I'm told that there's some sort of GoPro footage from this moment, but I have not seen it. His pants are cut off, and he's giving medical support. They are doing a breathing, like a breathing device in his neck called a crike, and they basically have to open up his airway to give him more breathing capacity through this device. They're also putting in another medical device for helping him with apparently like a collapsed lung or something like that.
Wow.
So they're doing a lot of different things, and the defense was arguing a bit in this Article 32 that the actual stabbing with a knife that Gallagher is alleged to have carried out was not a stabbing at all. There was no stab marks or anything of the sort. Instead, this is his lawyer, Phil Stackhouse, said that the crike, the insertion of the medical device in the neck, was what's more likely to have caused the fighter's death. I don't know what, you know, ultimately caused the death, and I'm sure that's something that we will find out going forward, and there will be plenty of debate on either side. But at this point, it's not really clear what occurred. Three eyewitness statements from others that were around this scene or close to it, who have spoken to NCIS and have said that Gallagher, you know, walked up and stabbed the ISIS fighter in the neck. The Gallagher side of the defense is countering by saying that the SEALs that are speaking out against him had conspired to come up with this story because they didn't like his leadership. He's known as a hard ass in the platoon, and he was very tough on his SEALs. And as Stackhouse kind of talked to me about it, the SEAL witnesses, basically, the theory is that they didn't really like Gallagher all that much and tried to get him removed in other forms or fashion by sort of talking about lower level problems in the platoon, which were unsuccessful. And then that ultimately led to these war crime allegations. Again, I don't know what, you know, it's sort of a he said, she said at this point. And so I don't really know what the answer is there, but it's clear that not really a clear-cut case. I suspect that I think the SEAL community itself is watching this one very closely, and I think there's probably a potential for more SEALs to be wrapped up in this case before it's all said and done. Right after Gallagher was his Article 32, the very next week, his platoon leader, Lieutenant Jake Portier, went through his own Article 32 hearing, and basically he's charged with more or less not reporting it up correctly to his chain of command, and the prosecution is basically saying that Portier did not do the right thing and tell his chain of command and sort of report these crimes up. And so he's getting charged as a result. But again, there's conflicting accounts on whether that, you know, that was actually the case. So,
wow, certainly speaks to the ugly gray area that is war, and we are faced with a lot of moral questions and a lot of compromises that have to be made on the field of battle, and you get into these situations and these scenarios. Did you find yourself conflicted while you were listening to this testimony? I mean, on one hand, here's a young guy, you know, believed or drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak, to join ISIS. But on the other hand, he was, in fact, just moments before the airstrike, willing to shoot and kill any of us. Certainly the Iraqi troops he was firing at, but he would have gladly shot and killed a Navy SEAL. I mean, did you find yourself conflicted trying to balance those two factors?
Well, I'm conflicted, but in a different way. So I'm a Marine Corps veteran, an infantryman. You know, I've served in Afghanistan, so I'm not very conflicted over, you know, drop a coalition airstrike or shoot back at an ISIS fighter. You know, a 15-year-old with a weapon is just as deadly as a 25-year-old with a weapon. So that's not my confliction. My conflict, I guess, is my understanding of what actually occurred. So if it is in fact the case that the SEALs got this ISIS fighter and they turned him over to the SEAL platoon at their compound, this is off the battlefield, they're relatively safe, they're not under fire or anything like that, and if it's established that, yes, you know, Gallagher actually stabbed this fighter, that is, you know, regardless of how you feel about ISIS, by the law of warfare, that's a crime. That would be justified to punish him for something like that. But my conflict comes from whether that was the case or whether, you know, the other side of the story has not been told yet, and whether this particular SEAL who's been in for almost 20 years now, has a Bronze Star, has been in combat in many, many places, has by all accounts before this incident served our country with distinction. If he's now being brought up on charges that are, you know, trumped up and not really the case, and, you know, he's a victim of this sort of conspiracy of a few SEALs in his platoon that didn't like him, that would be an absolutely terrible miscarriage of justice. And, you know, if that's the case, then I certainly hope that that part of the story comes out.
Do you know whether or not we are going to trial yet, or do you know this will proceed to court martial, or are we still waiting for that official word?
Yeah, that has not happened yet. So the Article 32 for Gallagher wrapped on, I don't have the exact day, but it was around November 19th or 20th. From there, the hearing officer, this Navy captain, basically has to write a report and then submit that to Naval Special Warfare Group 1. The Commodore there reads this report and then decides whether to send it to court-martial or whether to, you know, administratively punish him or whatever. It's really, he has wide latitude with what he can do. And so far I haven't gotten any word whether the report has been completed or anything of that nature. So it hasn't been officially, you know, referred to court martial, but, pretty much everybody I talk to says that's going to be the case.
As we await to hear if this goes to court martial, if I can just end with asking, you know, as a veteran yourself, as a Marine and an infantryman, do you believe that part of war can erode empathy to a warfighter? I mean, is it plausible to think that after so many tours of combat, you may lack the empathy required to make a decent judgment within the rules of engagement?
That's an interesting question. I think, you know, you kind of touch on something that almost immediately after my story published on the initial case, which was, you know, my headline was talking about the "got him with my hunting knife" text and that photo from Gallagher. And I sort of watched the reaction to that, and there are a lot of people noting the number of deployments that Gallagher had been on, and sort of saying, well, you know, what do you expect? You know, he's been on all these deployments. Obviously, he must have just snapped. I personally don't think that's the case. By looking at Gallagher's record, he was, as far as what the Navy has released, I mean, he's been the recipient of numerous awards. He's a chief of a platoon. He is a he's been put in that position of leadership. So obviously people are watching and judging him and saying he, you know, belongs in that role. And he was, before this even came about, he was about to be teaching SEALs combat tactics and sent to a schoolhouse to do so. So the idea that he, you know, deployments have sort of worn him down and made him less empathetic, I don't really think is the case.
Well, I'm glad you're covering it for us. War, it comes with a price, and there is certainly a dark side to every heroic story we hear about on the battlefield. And I'm glad you're down there covering it for us, even though the details are not pretty. You're going to help us follow the path and see what justice looks like in this case. Paul Zoldra, Editor-in-Chief of Task and Purpose, I really appreciate you sharing the story with us, man.
Thank you very much.
When my interview with Paul Zoldra concluded, I was looking through the news to find a follow-up on this, and I found an op-ed article from NewsRep.com, which is a website founded by Special Forces veterans. In it, Navy veteran Sean Spoons writes, "The reality is that war crimes are generally charged by the victor against the vanquished, and the record of justice being dispensed is oftentimes spotty. In this case, we aren't really the victors yet, and are charging our own people with war crimes. There's reason to wonder if real justice here can ever be done." Like Paul said in the interview, it's clear that this is not a clear-cut case. But how often do these types of situations occur? Now, I can't identify who's in this next interview, and his voice has been changed to protect his identity. But I was on the phone with a friend of mine that is a Special Forces veteran, and he shared with me this.
Like I remember we had this one guy who's just like a really bad, evil, cruel, responsible for a lot of deaths, both military and civilian, got rolled up, and then we had to transfer him to the Afghan National Security Forces, and everyone knew that he was going to be out in a matter of time. Like, everyone, because the system was so corrupt, that once they're in that system, unless they, you know, and it was just so frustrating to know, like, he was a really evil person who probably shouldn't be on this earth anymore. But now, because of politics and, like, whatever is going on, I have to transfer him to another person's custody who's probably just going to let him go because either they're corrupt or they're afraid that, you know, his cohorts are going to murder people's families mm-hmm. if they don't release him. You know, and that's so funny. So in, like, those cases, like, between you and me, like, if we had a really bad guy that was going to go free and there wouldn't be any, like, legal repercussions, I don't know of a single combat veteran that wouldn't eliminate that threat from the battle space. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, it's very frustrating because, like, you know, if you have one piece of paper, you're a hero. If you don't have that piece of paper, you're a murderer.
As of the publication date of this podcast, Chief Gallagher's fate still hangs in the balance. It remains to be seen what justice will look like. We'll follow the reporters at ConnectingVets.com and our friends like Paul Zoldra at Task and Purpose to find out more. I'm Phil Briggs, and in the meantime, I'll be searching through the internet to the ends of the earth to find the next tale we can tell on Vet Story.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.